Hi, everybody. I'm Gus Johnson along with the governor.
He says he got all his jeans from his mom. A lot of nylon.
A lot of excitement in the air.
Yes.
And we're ready for college basketball. College basketball. Oh, oh.
Gus.
Oh.
He's got onions.
Gus.
He's got onions.
Oh, oh.
Rise and
fight. Sets up the big fella to light it up. Yes. He's got onions.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to week 20 of the Big East Barroom. We're into a new part of the season, so we're into a new sponsor. We were lucky enough to partner with Home Field Apparel. Home Field Apparel is where you need to go for all your college basketball needs, selling great t-shirts for all 11 Big East basketball teams. Use the code BEBR at checkout to get 15% off of your order. Home Field Apparel has been great to us. Ryan and I both own a few shirts, and one of the things that I really like is they're unique, not just the generic, what you might find in the school store. You're going to find cool logos, comfortable shirts. Home Field Apparel is your place to go. 15% off, BEBR at checkout. Ryan, welcome to March. We are way into March. How are you?
Doing well. We recorded this podcast last week, so I don't need to be welcome to March here because I also see you all the time, so, but I appreciate the welcome. I also agree with everything you said about Home Field. We actually wear Home Field shirts, and we wanted to sponsor with them, so we're not plugging something we don't like. We really think they put out cool stuff.
Yeah. This is the best time of the year, but I think when you get all 11 teams playing in Madison Square Garden, that's the best time of the year. I think this might be one of the most active times of the year. You're going to talk about three teams that are still dancing into the Sweet 16. You're going to talk about eight teams when you've pretty much had activity for every single one of those eight teams. Seton Hall is still playing in the NIT right now. So we're going to just try our best. It might be a little less rigid of a, 3 minutes on an episode, but we're definitely going to try to hit on all these teams and just kind of talk some states of programs, but also talk about the three teams that are going to be playing meaningful basketball over the next week.
Okay, first off, the NIT is meaningful basketball, so you watch your mouth when you talk about Seton Hall. But yeah, we're going to start off with the three NCAA tournament teams. So if that's what you're tuning in for, we're hitting that right off the bat. We're going to do 6 minutes on the clock. We'll be a little loose with that if we want to go over. Ty, why don't we start with the Creighton Blue Jays, who will be a trend or in the Sweet 16, like all Big East teams that made the NCAA tournament. They beat Akron, and then they went and beat Oregon in one of the better games of the NCAA tournament, overtime thriller. You want to do quick thoughts on Akron first?
Don't bury the lead. I was at that game. Don't bury the lead here. I was there. I was in the building. I want my flowers. I'm driving to Pittsburgh to watch basketball.
That's the only reason you're in Pittsburgh, right?
That is one of the reasons I was in Pittsburgh. I did not know that Creighton would be there. Creighton played on Thursday against Akron, 77 to 60. Same old story for Creighton. If you've watched them this season, all five players scored in double digits, and they got no bench points. I thought Ryan Cockburn was an animal in this game. 23 points and 8 rebounds. I thought he was really, really good, but that's not really a hot take. Did you see anything in this game that, got you ready for Saturday?
Well, kind of my biggest takeaway was, if it wasn't for like the 9 fluke points for their center hitting threes that he wasn't doing all season, that would have been a blowout much earlier. I think Creighton kind of outclassed them. But they got 9 points in a game where they scored 60 points. They got 9 fluke points, so it made it look a little closer than it was for a long time.
And then you go to the game, one of the best games of the tournament, where you get to see double overtime against Oregon. Baylor Shireman was fantastic in this game. He hits the game tying shot to force overtime with about, 9 seconds left. I do have some concerns though coming after this game. Two players scored 60 points for Oregon. The rest of the team scored 13. Those two players, everybody in the stadium knew they were going to shoot. They shot 53 of the 77 shots, and Creighton could not stop them. Cousinard and Dante, that is. So I do have some concerns going into this game, but a win is a win. Survive in advance in March, and that's what Creighton's able to do.
Yeah, I'm not sure anybody on Creighton played great in this game. Like you said, Trey Alexander played. I don't think anybody was great in this game. I mean, the efficiency was terrible. Nobody could hit a shot. As you mentioned, nobody could stop Cousinard. But in the biggest moments, they managed to hit the shots they had to hit. I mean, that game, you know, we talked about it. We thought that game was over. When they're down 4 points with like a minute to go and Oregon has a ball, Oregon should put that game away every time. Baylor Shireman gets down in transition, draws a foul, gets 2 free throws. They get a stop. And then Baylor Shireman comes down, hits that midi fadeaway, sees it on the line. That's ice in his veins type shot.
Something about March brings out the best in Kalkbrenner. I know you said no one played amazing, but he did go for 19 and 14 and 5 blocks in this game. He did kind of get exposed by Dante defensively, their center, but he plays really well offensively. Right, one of the players I want to highlight who I don't think gets a ton of credit always is Jason Green. He had a huge minutes in this game. He added 9 rebounds, which is his season high, with 4 points. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking about getting 18 minutes from your bench from a team that doesn't play a bench and getting, you know, some offense, I think Jason Green's kind of raised his level a little bit. And you know, he didn't get a ton of minutes during the season. But if I'm talking about like an X factor for Creighton outside of the top five, which are pretty obvious, you know, Jason Green, I think, is as good of a bet as any.
Yeah, Greg McDermott gave him the game ball after that game for his performance. Really crediting him for sticking through the tough times where he wasn't getting any playing time. How many rebounds do you have?
He had 9 rebounds in this game.
9 rebounds. I mean, that's crazy. That's a huge number. He had at least 1 putback dunk. Any production they can get off the bench is huge for them.
And Ryan, I'll tell you a hint. I don't even know if 9 rebounds is a season high. I'm guessing, but that has to be a season high.
Remember, he had 2 threes against UConn when they beat the number one team in the country. Also, he's been really important in their biggest games.
Ryan, I think we should pivot a little bit to talk about the matchup with Tennessee that's coming up. I actually did a ton of research on this game because I had to do a ton of research on this game. Everyone knows that they're going into face Dalton Knecht. Dalton Knecht is one of the best players in the country. He's a consensus All-American. But one of the things that I was doing when I was watching some of these highlights is trying to see how they'd match up against Creighton. And one of the players that really stuck up to me, and if you're looking forward to this Creighton game, is they have Jonas Adu. I'm not 100% of that's how you pronounce his name. Their center, who is going to take probably the second most amount of shots in this game. So that, to me, bodes well for...
How big is he?
He's about 6'11".
Okay, he's not undersized.
No, and then one of the things that I'm most interested in is their point guard, Zakai Zegler, is only 5'9", but he's the fastest dude you've ever seen in your life, like Sean Jones level of fast. So I am wondering if they are going to just say, you know, Ashworth is going to guard him because of the size is more, you know, closer in height. Or they're going to say Tricky is going to have to guard him because Tricky's probably a little bit faster. Those are the two matchups I'm looking at because I think to talk about Dalton Knecht on Baylor Shireman as the main matchup in that game is kind of boring because, yeah, obviously Dalton Knecht and Baylor Shireman is the main matchup.
Yeah, Tennessee's defense is like one of the top three in the country. Listen, Creighton's not going to win this game if they can't hit shots. If they shoot the same way they did against Oregon, they're going to lose. Yeah. So they need to defend. Tennessee's not a great offensive team, but they're going to have to hit some threes. Or are they shooting like 25% from three for most of the game? I think they finally got that number up in overtime. But
And Tennessee holds teams to 31% shooting from deep this year. One of the Tennessee fans I was talking to said that the way that Tennessee loses games is they get punched in the mouth early and they don't know how to recover. If you watch that Mississippi State-Tennessee championship SEC game, Mississippi State just absolutely bullied them from the beginning, pushed them off their spots, and they could never recover. I do worry about a team that's physical like Tennessee, playing a team like Creighton, who has struggled with some physicality. But, you know, the Big East is one of the most physical conferences, and Creighton won 70% of their Big East games. Right. So I can't – they're ready for this, but I don't know – this is obviously isn't a great matchup, but it's a 3-2 matchup in the Sweet 16. You're not going to have a very favorable matchup.
Yeah, unless, you know, you get a crazy upset. But that is 6 minutes. Do we want to go over to – why don't we go to the Huskies, put 6 minutes on the clock, and they as well are going to the Sweet 16 after beating Stetson in one of the more boring NCAA tournament games you'll ever see in your life, and the Northwestern in a game that wasn't a ton more interesting. Not much to talk about for Stetson. I don't know if you have any takeaways you want to mention.
No, they're a wagon through Stetson. I guess if you're ever worried about anything, UConn wins the first half by 33 points and only wins the second half by 6. These are first world problems at this point. UConn is winning every game by double digits. But it does seem like in very, very, very big blowout that their foot is slightly coming off the gas. If I had to talk about one thing that's at all even a 1% concern.
And we saw the same thing against Northwestern last night. Where they were, I mean, they were outclassed in Northwestern in the first half, and then they kind of let Northwestern get back in the game to some degree in the second half. I was never concerned about it, but it's one of those, you know, the score doesn't give you an idea of how close that game was because it was not close for a long time.
Yeah, they win the first half by 22 points, 40-18. Didn't look like it was even going to be competitive, and then they lose the second half by 5. Now, how much of that do I care about when you're getting, you know, Yusuf Singare at the end of the game in the game? Like, do I care what his plus minus is? No. So, because the game was over. I think if that's a very minor concern. I think if we're going to talk positives, you have to start with the big man in the middle, and that's Donovan Clingan.
Did you see Gavoni has him up to number 6 in the NBA draft?
I mean, my only question is, did people just look at him and go, oh, he's actually really good? And it's like, yeah, well, he's been really good.
Yeah, but he wasn't moving like this last season, and he's gotten better in his ability to move in space over the course of this season. Some of those blocks he had yesterday were like, I mean, you'd never believe this kid is what, 19, maybe 20, and 7'2", and he's moving like, you know, he's 6'6". Like, it's impressive.
Right, if I told you that in one of these two games that Donovan Clingan went for 19, 14, and 8 blocks, you'd have been like, oh, against Stetson, because they're a low major team. No, it was against a Big Ten team that faced Zach Edey and beat Zach Edey this year, and they didn't know what to do with Donovan Clingan.
Yeah, so some Northwestern fans saying, like, I'm not saying it, but some Northwestern fans on Twitter were saying he's better than Edey.
I mean, defensively, I don't know how you argue that there's a lot better players in the country. One of the things this is, again, minor technical. I thought Clingan did a really good job outside of one example yesterday of not pursuing blocks that he couldn't get. Sometimes I think he does, and it allows putbacks. He went for that one, remember, where he had a bad goaltend, like when he was in the middle of that block run, but he didn't continuously go for them. I thought he contested really well. Dude is just a monster.
And then how about Steph Castle on the perimeter? I mean, I don't know if they're in the entire country, if there's a better perimeter interior defender combo then Steph Castle guarding your best guard and Donovan Clingan patrolling the paint. I mean, that's UConn. For the last year and a half, UConn has not been a defense first team. Their defense is, I mean, probably better than their offense at this point.
Hard when you have the number one rated offense, but I mean, I get where you're coming. You have two, you at probably anytime you step on the court, you'll have two of the two best defenders in the game in Castle and Clingan.
Yeah, the number one, I mean, the defense where it's ranked on KenPom is over the course of the season. I'm talking about how they're playing right now. But I do see your point when you're talking number one offense.
Boo Booey this season shot 43% from 3 while averaging 19 points a game. We love Cam Spencer. He did that on more volume than Cam Spencer did while being the best player on Northwestern. Steph Castle held him to 2 of 15 shooting yesterday in the biggest game of his life. This kid had not played a March Madness game, Boo Booey. And he plays a March Madness game, wants to come out and be the number one team. 2 of 15 with a freshman guarding you. Think about how frustrating that must have been.
True freshman. I mean, this kid is not 19. This is an 18-year-old playing against a 23-year-old Boo Booey. I think this is his fifth year.
Yeah, this is Booey's fifth year of college. Played basketball before. Boo Booey's playing basketball before we even knew what the word COVID meant. I mean, like,
the Huskies get...
We're playing... We have a rematch of the championship game from last year. We're going to face San Diego State. I did some research on this team as well. And one of the players that their best player is by far, I don't want to make sure I say that his name right, but it's Jaden Ledee. Jaden Ledee, I would guess. Ledee, like I know the name Ledee is a name. And Jaden Ledee did play in the championship game last year for all those. He shot 3 of 6. He came off the bench. Right, this year he's averaging 21.5 points and 8.4 rebounds per game. He's a senior, 6'9". I don't know if they play a guy that's taller than him. I mean, I know they have players on the team that are taller than him, but I'm not sure they play them consistently, or if that will be the Donovan Klingon matchup.
UConn spread -7.5.
They've been at -11.5.
-11.5. I mean, this is a 5 seed, right?
That went to the national championship last year.
Yeah. There's some teams that can give UConn a good game. Illinois could give UConn a really good game. UNC did give them a pretty good game in MSG until it got away at the end. But we're talking about the top 5 teams in the country, give them good games. Otherwise, you're at risk of a blowout.
Yeah, I hate to just sit here and sound cocky. UConn might lose in this tournament. I will bet any amount of money they will not lose to San Diego State. I think they had a better chance to lose to Northwestern than they do to San Diego State.
Yeah, I think I don't disagree with you at all. But that's 6 minutes, so let's go to our last Sweet 16 team. And this one's a little extra sweet for us, I think, because there's a little bit of redemption to it after the way last season ended. The Marquette Golden Eagles are going to the Sweet 16. They beat Western Kentucky in a game we had to sweat, and then they beat Colorado.
In a game we really had to sweat.
So they haven't made it exactly easy on themselves, but when they had to, they've hit huge shots. Stevie Mitchell was incredible in that Western Kentucky game, almost turned it around single-handedly. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Right, I'll be honest with you. Bachelor party this weekend, open bar by the time the Marquette game came along. Western Kentucky's a little bit, don't know. Yeah, probably they beat him. I know the game was close, and then it wasn't close all of a sudden. I don't really have a ton of analysis on that, unfortunately, but they did beat Colorado, and that game was an up-and-down game a little bit more.
Tyler's high-level analysis. They did win.
They did win. They definitely beat Western Kentucky. I didn't really have anything on Stetson either. I did watch the whole entire Marquette-Colorado game. I thought after Colorado put up 100 points, this could be a problem. I don't think Marquette made a lot of stops, and I think that offensive effort is going to be an issue if they play like that again. Also remembering that Colorado is one of the best shooting teams in the country, but Marquette shot 62% in this game and played a 4-point game. So either you're really happy they won and shot 62%, or you're really concerned because they just shot 62% and won by 4.
Yeah, I had 2 major takeaways, and you pretty much hit on them. Colorado can't play defense to save their lives. I mean, they couldn't guard simple pick-and-roll actions. Nobody can guard Tyler Kolek in a pick-and-roll, but they couldn't even make it hard on him. I mean, do you remember the opening drive by Cam Jones, and he just walks to the basket and takes a layup?
They were like, you're a lefty? You're going to be shooting with your left hand this whole game?
It's like, guys, did you watch any tape? All they do is run pick and rolls.
They have 3 lefties, and they were just so confused. Chase Ross, Tyler Kolek, and Cam Jones, they were like, they thought it was devil magic when they were playing with their left hands.
And then you paired that with Oregon's defense the night before, where, Creighton didn't put up a lot of points, but they had a ton of open shots. What are they doing in the Pac-12? They just don't defend anybody?
Yeah, the Colorado game – or the Oregon game was mind-numbing because I couldn't figure out how Creighton wasn't up by 50.
But then my second point was Marquette made a lot of defensive mistakes, a lot of bad rotations, some, blow-bys, some not picking up your man in transition, stuff we're not really used to seeing from them. You wonder how much of it is nerves. You wonder how much of it is the moment. They can't do that going forward. They will lose.
Yeah. I wonder how much of it's that they hadn't played with Kolek for a few games. So maybe just learning where each other are again. They play so, connected defense that they might be struggling remembering exactly where you're supposed to be. Part of it is Colorado's just really good offensively. That's not like a. I know what you're saying. You're a perfectionist here, too. I mean, but Colorado, has one of the best. I think they might be one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the country.
Yeah, but it's on pretty low volume. I don't know. They did hit some tough shots. They absolutely hit some tough shots. But Marquette could have beat that team pretty easily if they played the level of defense we know they're capable of. Like they did against Providence at the end of the regular season. Do you remember that defensive effort? They were just everywhere.
I have 2 points back to you because you gave 2 good points, and I would like to give 2 flowers out. One, Mr. David Joplin. David Joplin was a little maligned at certain points this year, going from the sixth man of the year to being one of the starters. He shot 2 of 6 from three. And normally if he shot 2 of 6 from three in a game, I would say, Ryan, he had 6 points. David Joplin got to the hole multiple times while hitting, you know, while dunking the ball with authority. I thought he was really, you know, good around the rim. He hit the free throws to win the game while being an average free throw shooter. I let you do both your points. Now you got your hand up over there.
No, I just, you'll never guess what action he got that dunk off of.
Was it a pick and roll, Ryan?
It was a pick and they can't guard. I don't know how they couldn't guard the pick and roll.
Also, I had a theory that Marquette didn't give a shit about the Big East tournament. And I want that theory to be so realized because Tyler Kolek played 40 minutes in this game. And if his oblique was really hurting him that badly, I'm not saying he wasn't. They were trying to get him to 100%. But Tyler Kolek could have played in the Big East tournament. And I think they chose to hold him out.
Do you know the shot Chase Ross hit at the one of the last shots of the game? He hit a three and he falls down afterwards.
Yes. One of the biggest shots of the game.
Go back and look at the pass Kolek makes on that. It's a jump, turn around, two-handed. Like, if his oblique was not 100% healthy, there's no way he's making that pass.
And I don't blame Marquette. I'm not sitting here and blaming Marquette for holding him out of the Big East tournament. I'm just saying he played like 36 minutes against Western Kentucky and then 40 against Colorado. And I'm supposed to believe that he was a game-time decision for some of these tournament games? Come on. Like, the guy, kid is a gamer. He could have played it, but, you know, that is what it is.
Business decision.
I also was really impressed. Sorry, I third point didn't realize Oso Igudaro just going down and getting whatever he wanted on hook shots. I thought in big situations he would just back people down and just throw up that little push shot and shot 5 of 6.
Did you see what Kolek said after the game about nightmares?
We're not running from our nightmares anymore.
I love that, man. I love this kid. I'd go to war with him. I love this team. I'm not impartial. Sometimes I'm biased. This team means a lot to us, and it was really, you know, it was a little emotional seeing them get to move to the second weekend and, you know, answer a lot of those questions or shut a lot of people up is another way to say it.
Right. I think we should probably just extend a little bit to talk about NC State because they are going to be playing NC State in the next round. If you know NC State, you know that their best player is DJ Burns, who is an absolute unit of a human being. He is 6'9", 275 pounds, and I think that might be generous. Ryan, I'm going to be honest with you. This is a Big East podcast. I can be honest here. DJ Burns does not have the endurance to get up and down the court with Marquette. He was exhausted at certain times in the game that they won against Oakland. He did not, you know, I'm not trying to insult him. He's an excellent passer out of the paint. He has incredible touch. He might give Oso some problems in the half court, but DJ Burns trying to guard Oso Igudaro when Oso Igudaro is just going to run around him. I think this is a very favorable matchup when their best player is a plotting center and you have Oso Igudaro on your team.
What you're saying is they can't run with us?
No, and nobody can run with Marquette.
They can't run with us. Creighton gave DJ Burns fits last year in the NCAA tournament. That's about all I know about him. So I will leave your recap. Also, we're out of time anyway.
Really good passer, though. Really surprising how good of a passer he is.
That wraps up the three March Madness teams. We are going to go into some of the teams in their offseason, talk about the transfer portal. If you don't want to listen to that, you could skip to the timestamp with the mailbag, and we'll talk a little bit more about the NCAA tournament then.
Ryan, you talked about March Madness, but you know what? I say if you're playing, it's March Madness. And there's still a team playing in the Big East right now as we speak. And I think we have to put 2 minutes on the clock to talk about the Seton Hall Pirates, who are playing in an NIT quarterfinal on Wednesday against UNLV. Rye, I'll admit, my focus has been elsewhere, but I've heard Isaiah Coleman has played very well in these games.
Isaiah Coleman has had really good games. I watched more of the first game, the game against, who did they play?
Seton Hall's first game of the tournament was against St. Joseph's.
Yeah, it's St. Joseph's. And they were down in the first half, and they kind of looked like they weren't sure if they wanted to be there. And then, you know, these are older guys. These are mature guys. A lot of leadership on this team. It looked like all of a sudden they decided, like, yeah, like, we want to be there. And then Alamir Dawes went, you know, thermonuclear, hitting everything. Jaden Badiako, you know, contributed a lot, and they're too good of a team to lose to St. Joseph's if they're really playing hard. And then Kadari Richmond was ridiculous in the North Texas game. I don't know if you have that box score.
I do have that box score up. That's where Isaiah Coleman scored 14 points. Kadari Richmond in that game went for 11 and 15 and 6. I think, it's got to be hard for a team like Seton Hall that had aspirations to go dancing, that did enough to go dancing and not to be dancing. I give those kids a lot of credits, especially an older team like that, to get up and play that game and win that game.
Walsh, Jim, thoughts?
I think you hit it on the head when you tweeted it. The camera angle is awful. I think it's probably a really cool environment to watch a game in, but the camera angle is so bad that it almost makes you not want to watch it on the TV.
It's supposed to be like 2,000 people. You might want to fact check me on that. But, I mean, that would be electric to play in. And I know they did about 2 or 3 years ago. They played one game in there. And then that was when Willard came out with the whole, like, I hate Walsh Gym. I want to play all my games at the Prudential Center, which was a very weird storyline, which I pretty much forgot until our buddy Tom Left Coast Pirate reminded me about it.
Yeah, unfortunately, you were wrong. It is 1,300 people can fit in Walsh Gym.
So even smaller than
It is a small gym. That's crazy. 1,300 is probably less than what your local high school can hold, like, or close. Like, it's incredibly small.
I will talk so much junk if the Big East wins the NCAA tournament and the NIT tournament.
Yeah.
People will mute me. I'll be blocked on Twitter by a lot of people because I'm going to be insufferable.
No, what I like is we can change the narrative. Like, when Providence and all those teams lost, and Providence Xavier, yeah, it's hard to get up for a game when you got snubbed. Seton Hall wins? No, it's because they're that good. So I'm just going to keep changing the narrative to be what I need it to be.
They won despite it being hard to get up for it. That says even more about them.
They're not even trying, and they're winning.
All right, we gave Seton Hall 3 minutes there because they deserved it. But now let's move over to some of the teams that are in their offseason. Ty, call out one you want to talk about first.
Let's talk about the team that I thought was snubbed the most, the Providence Friars. And we can talk transfer portal. We have three players in the transfer portal. We have Rafael Castro, we have Garway Duell, and we have Donovan Santoro. Did I say it? Got all three of them right. Garway Duell is the least surprising one. He did not get minutes. Wish him luck, former top 50 prospect. Rafael Castro is a top 150 prospect, and he's in the portal as well. Hey, for me, if I'm Providence right now, I'm looking for shooters to replace Ticket Gaines. I'm looking for a true point guard to put next to Jaden Pierre, and I need somebody to replace Devin Carter, which isn't possible. So I'm a little skeptical just because it's going to be hard to replace what they're losing.
It is a little interesting to me, right? Because English, when he came in last year, he prioritized so much keeping the players that were already on the team. This year, there seems to be less of that priority.
He goes, no, we tried that. Nah, we don't need you.
I'm just like Santoro. Okay, whatever. Castro, even whatever. But Garway Duell, you know, was a guy that changed his commitment from Cooley to English. He has all of the physical talents. He didn't have the season he wanted to, but he certainly showed flashes of potentially being a really good point guard. I mean, I think he has a Kadari Richmond future of being an oversized point guard with incredible length and being a defensive disruptor.
Questions. You don't want to sit here and rip anyone's makeup, but questions when you're a freshman and you're punching someone in the face. There are questions. Kim English was the first one on the court during that. Bryce Hopkins recommitted to coming back pretty much, and that's the biggest dub of all. Providence could still be a top five team in the Big East next year if Bryce Hopkins plays to his potential, and we'll all be rooting for that. But replacing Devin Carter and Josh Adoro, especially off this team with what they carried, hey, the transfer portal cures all. We'll see what happens. But, man, that's scary.
It will be really interesting to see how Kim English builds a full team with a full offseason around his identity. I'm really looking forward to that. And, two, you didn't complain about Garway Duell throwing that punch when you were posting the clips and telling all the jokes. But now you're going to complain about it, huh?
Yeah, well, he gave me some clicks, but it wasn't probably a good idea. Well. That's it for the vest and the Fanta windmill and all that. Right. Who do you want to talk about next?
Let's go over to the Xavier Musketeers because there's been a lot of talk of them in the portal as well. You have Abu Usman went in, Sasha Chani, Tachi Enzi, and Cam Kraft. Cam Kraft notably was part of that freshman group that it was so important for Sean Miller to keep after Travis Steele left. I don't know if you remember that. Desmond Claude, Cam Kraft, and then they lost the top recruit in that, who's in LSU and not playing well.
I think if we try not to be a podcast that speculates a lot. There's plenty of rumors that Desmond Claude is entering the transfer portal. I do find it very interesting that we complained all year that Xavier doesn't have a five and then all their fives entered the transfer portal. I wonder if Sean Miller was also frustrated that they did not hit their potential. But interestingly enough, it looks like Djokovic might stay, or maybe he's just going to say it way later. Xavier needs a five, which they needed last year. And if they keep their two guards, they're going to be fine.
And also, we missed one of the biggest pieces of news. Davion McKnight told Kai Muskie on Twitter that he will be back, yes, which is not only really great news, but really funny way to break the news. So props to Davion.
He was like, yeah, of course I'll be back. So good for him. And so Xavier,
you're building around him and Djokovic. Is that what it looks like right now?
Build around him and Djokovic and pray that you can offer Desmond Claude the NIL package that he wants to bring back Desmond Claude. You bring back those three players, Xavier's a top four team in the Big East going into next year, in my opinion.
Claude will have suitors, so.
Oh, Claude will have suitors for sure, but bring in. I mean, Xavier's already reached out to every player in the portal. Every time he comes out, Xavier's on the top.
So, yeah, there's two kinds of people that enter the portal. There's some that enter the portal because the coach told them there's no spot for you, and there's some that enter the portal because they want to know what the NIL situation's like.
Yes.
Claude falls into the latter category. Not sure about the other ones.
I believe I would speculate Xavier centers were told they should probably look elsewhere for employment.
All right, your pick, Tuck.
Right, let's get them out of the way while we're here. Let's talk about the Georgetown Hoyas, who have had a very interesting offseason because I don't think they've had as much exodus as I thought. They lost two players, Rowan Brumbaugh, who I thought showed a ton of promise this year. Rumors are they might be recruiting over him. And we had Wayne Bristol Jr., who is a fan favorite of ours because he plays harder than anybody in the country.
Yeah, I love Wayne Bristol. Sad to see him go, but you can see why. He'd been there for a few years, and I'm just not sure he's a high major player in the end. But maybe he'll make me look dumb, and I'm rooting for him because he never cheats you on effort. Rowan Brumbaugh, as you mentioned, was very interesting. And they have Kayvon Mulready coming in, and they got Jaden Epps. And what, they're going to go get another point guard that wants to start?
I don't know what they're I don't know what that was. I had heard rumors that Jaden Epps was going to put his name into the portal, and then I heard that that is false, and Jaden Epps is not putting his name into the portal. If you bring back Jaden Epps and Kayvon Mulready next year as your backcourt, I think that's a pretty darn good one. I think you would have loved to have Rowan Brumbaugh as your sixth man, but I think Rowan Brumbaugh probably said, I had some success playing in a Power Six conference. As a starter, I don't need to go and be anybody's sixth man.
Yeah, I'm really happy to hear Drew Fielder has not hit the portal yet. I think he could be really good for them. You got Sorber coming in. You got a lot of really interesting pieces. Ed Cooley, he gets another year. Next year is a brand new year, and see if he can put anything together.
Yeah, Georgetown needs to recruit in the transfer portal. They've already recruited the high school students. Now going to the transfer portal, supplement that team. You got to win more than two Big East games next year, and if you don't, you're an absolute failure, and I think Ed Cooley should be fired.
Speaking of people you think should be fired, do you want to go over to Queens?
First of all, I don't think Rick Pitino should be fired. I think he should be in jail for giving me the ick. I'm kidding.
Rick, we've had two people join the portal. It's Cruz Davis, who followed him over from Iona last year, and Drissa Traore, who was one of the two holdovers from the Mike Anderson era with Joel Soriano. Joel Soriano is leaving, which heartbreakingly brings to a close the Mike Anderson era in Queens, New York.
Yeah, I would defend Mike Anderson, but in honor of him, I'm not going to play any defense. Yeah, no, Joel Soriano is gone. Naeem Aline's gone. Dennis Jenkins is gone. Jordan Dingle is gone. You know my fears on this, that this next year will be no different than this year. I know you believe differently, but I just worry you're going back into the transfer portal for almost your entire team. You're going to rely on RJ Lewis pretty much as your main piece you're going to build around, or Ryan's going to tell me you're going to build around someone else.
Listen to this backcourt. Simeon Wilcher, RJ Davis, Brady Dunlap.
They're getting RJ Davis from North Carolina.
RJ Lewis. I mean, they're all freshmen. Simeon Wilcher's father already says Simeon Wilcher's coming back. Brady Dunlap seems to be coming back. I haven't heard anything. Those are three really nice pieces. And you have Rick Pitino for a full year, full offseason.
You had Rick Pitino for a full offseason last year, by the way. We just passed the one-year anniversary of Rick and Ed Cooley deciding.
He was looking for an apartment, okay? He was looking. He had a lot to do. He had to find his office. He was busy.
Yeah. I'm skeptical, but hey, good for St. John's that they're going to go in with a little more stability, and we'll see what happens.
See what they do with the front court. They got no front court pieces right now. Isn't Ledlam also done?
Yeah, Ledlam should be done. You could play RJ Lewis maybe as a small ball four in some situations. He can stretch it. He's probably the size of Alex Caravan.
You probably don't want to rely on it. You probably want to have more of a change of pace. But
Right. Let's talk about the DePaul Blue Demons. I'm bringing the good teams, and I know there's a lot to talk about with DePaul for the first time ever because I believe they have four players in the transfer portal: Jalen Terry, Elijah Fisher, Deshaun Nelson, and KT Ramey. The fact that I'm getting all these without any notes is unbelievable.
Yeah, I have it pulled up and I'm checking for him, but Tyler got that off the top of his head. Tyler's a confirmed Blue Demon lover.
I watched the Blue Demons until they won a game this year, and I watched every minute of the Blue Demons until they won a game this year.
And the most important thing about the DePaul offseason thus far would be Mr. Chris Holtman, who they zagged when we all thought they were going to zig and kind of surprised us all. But I like Chris Holtman. I used to watch that Ohio State team he had with EJ Liddell. They ran really interesting offense. He had, you know, really – he had a lot of offensive weapons, and he used them in really interesting ways. I don't know. Interesting hire.
Hey, listen, what you needed to do is you needed to bring in a coach that wasn't a rising star. You needed to bring in a coach that had Power Six experience that was going to sit there and be like, you know what? I've done this before. I know what it takes to win at this level. Even if Holtzman's term at Ohio State ended poorly, he still had success at Ohio State as recently as the last few couple years. I'm a little surprised that all four of those players entered the transfer portal. I thought Elijah Fisher or Jalen Terry could be a piece going forward. But you know what? I don't get a right to say that because when a team goes 0-20, every single player should, you know, be an option to be transferring.
I'm really glad you checked yourself there because somebody needs to, because you'd be getting out of control. And
I want to be mad because you watch Jalen Terry hit logo threes and it's like, think about how good. And it's like, no, they couldn't because they went 0-20. It doesn't matter. Like, you need that whole culture almost out of there. And that sucks for the kids, but it's almost better for the kids too, because now they're going to go to a culture where they didn't go 0-20 last year.
That's my favorite kind of culture is one prayer.
And I think we should probably just do a 2-second moment of silence for Deshaun Nelson, one of our favorite players. So ready? 1, 2. Deshaun Nelson is going to bring energy wherever he goes. Ryan, my prediction is we're watching Deshaun Nelson play in the NCAA tournament as a sixth man for an okay 8 or 9 seed next year.
I love it. I hope it's true. And he's going to throw down some crazy dunks and is going to play on ESPN for sure. But let's move over to Butler, who has one player in the transfer portal. He was in, he was out. We weren't sure if he was going. It's DJ Davis, who just confirmed yesterday that he is in the transfer portal. Some questions about why, some questions about how it happened. Some people are speculating Thad Matta wanted to get bigger in his backcourt, and he has two guys who are under 6 feet, in Posh and DJ Davis. And some people are speculating DJ made the decision all on his own. So
I think it's important to note for, you know, we're very novice at this too, and we're kind of getting with the transfer portal. Plenty of Big East players put their name in the transfer portal last year and withdrew. And when I say plenty, like 3 or 4 of it, of like the 50 that did, you know, Jaden Pierre put his name in the transfer portal, withdrew. Deshaun Nelson put his name in the transfer portal and withdrew. So it's not a full gone conclusion that any of these players are gone. Some of them are exploring some options, NIL deals. But I do think DJ Davis is probably gone. I do think great news, Posh Alexander pretty much confirmed he's coming back. Pierre Brooks did say they're running it back. This Butler team, I need to stop saying everybody's a top 4 team for next year because I'm just spring, you know, hope springs eternal. But I mean, if they bring back Jameel Telford too, and they bring back a 5, and they can bring in a 5, and bring, you know, Finley Bizjack can step up and be the 2, we're talking about a team that I think, you know, could be one of the better teams in the Big East next year.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, you just named some really impressive offensive weapons in Jameel Telfer and Pierre Brooks. We know what Posh Alexander brings to the table in terms of intangibles. It's all about replacing Jalen Thomas, in my opinion. I think he was underrated as kind of the defensive stalwart. He was a foundation, a consistent. Those guys don't grow on trees, so they'll have to find the right match in the transfer portal. But, yeah, love the early bones on that team. And then that brings us to the Villanova Wildcats, who I believe are our last team of the night. They have no players in the transfer portal. They're the only team not playing that has nobody in the transfer portal. Go ahead.
Oh, just there's going to be someone entering the transfer portal.
Yes, we've heard rumors about several people entering the transfer portal, but as of now, there's nobody in the transfer portal.
Two players will be entering the transfer portal.
So we know TJ Bamba's done. We know Tyler Burton's done, right?
I believe that Hakeem Hart and Justin Moore are both done as well.
Yeah. By and large, the speculation is that Eric Dixon's done.
Eric Dixon is at least should explore his NBA and pro options. And then selfishly, I hope that he says, you know what, I can come back and make some money at Villanova. But Eric Dixon has done everything you can at college. He's played six different years in college. I don't know if he needs to keep coming back to prove anything. Dude is an animal. Didn't he come in and redshirt 1 year?
Like a redshirt freshman and then? No, that was his five. He hasn't played his COVID year. That's why he could come back.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, I'll root for Eric Dixon to come back. Villanova needs a whole culture change. I thought that should start at the top, but they have made it clear that they are going to bring back Kyle Neptune for one more year.
In 12 months, they'll get their culture change when they fire Kyle Neptune. They're counting down. They're 363 days away from their culture change.
You know, we could just do it now and hit the reset button, say we made a mistake. Villanova lost as the number one seed in the NIT tournament. And I thought if you need to talk about a culture change, nobody showed up, right? Nobody showed up. And I get it that nobody shows up to an NIT game. It's an NIT game. People are disappointed. Villanova has got a rabid fan base. No one wanted to watch their team play one more game. Listen, Villanova is in danger of losing their winning culture to the point where people are not going to just come to Villanova because it's Villanova. And they have, you know, and that can go real quick. And I think we're approaching that.
I absolutely agree with you. It's a very small school. Our father went there many years ago, and he used to talk about nobody thought they'd ever have any basketball success because of how small of a school it is. Jay Wright worked a miracle. Raleigh Massimino won a national championship. But, the way Jay Wright established him as a perennial contender was a miracle and really easy to undo that.
I don't like that you just said that dad went there many years ago, and I will be calling father after this game.
He's so old.
All right, Rye, that is 11 teams, and stick around after this short break, and we're going to go do a little bit of a mailbag. All right, Big East Barroom fans, we are excited to announce that we have joined forces and partnered with Home Field Apparel. One of the great things about Home Field Apparel is they cover all 11 Big East teams. I like it because you get the generic shirts from the team store and all this. No. You're going to Home Field Apparel. You're going to be getting a new shirt. You're going to be wearing something unique. People are going to stop you. They're going to say, where'd you get that? You're going to say Home Field Apparel, all right? You're going to say, enter the code BEBR, and you get a discount. How about that? And then you're going to take their phone. We've talked a lot about this on the podcast. You're going to take their phone. You're going to take their credit card out respectfully, and you're going to put in the information, BEBR, get yourself a discount. Get yourself a Big East shirt. You're going to the Big East tournament. You want to wear a shirt. You don't want to be the guy who has the Creighton Blue Jay just like everybody else. Go get yourself a shirt, Home Field Apparel, BEBR. Check us out. All right, Rye, we put out today, which we hadn't done in a while. I actually did this without asking you because I thought we might have something, you know, some things to talk about. Put out a mailbag. So let's talk about what the people want to hear. And the first question is from someone I really wish I knew how to say his last name, because it's one of, we both said it's one of our favorite follows on Twitter. Christian Odajikan?
The kid knows ball. It's ODK Hoops.
Yeah. And he said, do you think Kalkbrenner can eat against an undersized Tennessee front court? Are you afraid of the Vols guard's ability to make life hell for Trey and Ashworth? And how do you think Baylor will fail against Connect? Right, I will take part of this because I just did watch a lot of film on Tennessee. I think Carpenter is going to be fine against Adu. He's a lot bigger than him. He's going to be able to stop him from shooting over the top of him. Adu is not a physical specimen like Balo or DJ Burns or someone who's just a lot bigger. He's more of an athletic center. But yes, I'm very worried about what Zakai is going to be able to do to Steven Ashworth. He is so flipping fast. Like, it is unbelievable the way that he is going to play. And Baylor Shireman against Connect, yeah, the game will come down to that. But expect Baylor Shireman to score about 20 points and expect Dalton Connect to score about 20 points and hope that you can win on the margins.
Yeah, I think if Creighton is able to run a bunch of off-ball screens and get open shots and knock them down, it neutralizes a lot of Tennessee's strengths. And if they have to, if they're missing shots and have to start driving the ball, then Tennessee's physicality and quickness and all those things come into play a lot more. You want to play kind of fast and free and not, you know, have to get into the lane against these guys.
FF, who is, I've had a lot of conversations with recently. I don't want to out anything. Said Shaw's not going to go to Louisville. And we got two questions about this. And what I'll say is I don't understand college basketball sometimes because I truly believe there would be no reason to go to Louisville. But also I've watched some of these coaches take steps laterally or steps down, and it's all about money. And I know Louisville has quite the reputation. So I would say Shaw is happy where he is, but I also heard Seton Hall's NIL money situation's bad. So a multitude of reasons. I'll say no, but I'm also naive and never think they're going to leave.
Jay Wright was speaking about Dusty May after he went from FAU and he took the Michigan job. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, you get into the tournament a few times at these lower seeds and you keep losing, and all you want is just to have a chance to win.
Yeah.
And you go against these huge programs. But I don't think Shaheen Holloway is at that point yet, and hopefully he never gets to that point. But, you know, he's still building Seton Hall. I think if in 5-10 years he's had no success there, or he keeps getting them to the NCAA tournament, but you just can't compete against a Kentucky or a Duke or whatever, then you might be looking at it. But I'd be very surprised if he leaves Seton Hall this early after he talked so long about how important the program is to him.
Kim English apologist, Friars Capital, said, thoughts on the vest?
Sexy.
Just, they're the weirdest. I said the other day, like, they're assholes, but there are assholes. And, like, that's Providence Twitter. I mean, but they're crazy. Like, good for you guys. You guys are weird. But, like, awesome. Like, at the same time. Barstool Marquette says, Tyler Kolek, the best point guard in the nation.
I guess some people look at Sheed over in Houston. I don't think it's close. I think it's Kolek.
I'm going to sit there and argue that Tristan Newton is having just as good of a year as anyone and won a national championship last year. Big Tasty Kate said, I think this is a good question, and I would like to take this, I think, with one argument each. What argument for and against Villanova's decision to bring back Kyle Neptune? And I think it'd be more interesting. The decisions against bringing Kyle Neptune back are very obvious. They suck the last 2 years with a lot of talent. If I was going to say four, everyone gets 3 years. Kyle Neptune's getting his players in, trying to establish his own culture while replacing a legend. He should get one more year. I don't believe anything I'm saying, but sometimes a great debater has to be able to debate the other side.
Also, Jay Wright struggled at the beginning of his tenure at Villanova. Villanova administration will remember that. And Jay Wright's beating that drum of, like, I struggled. So I get it. I get why you bring him back. I think it's the right move to bring him back. And maybe he'll make us all look dumb.
Taylor Houck, friend. If Jay Wright were to return to Villanova, would it make them an immediate, lead them back to the second weekend, pretty much?
You know, he was connected to the Kentucky job recently, right? That's a complete joke. He's never going to Kentucky. That's not even – him coming back to Villanova has to be like an order of magnitude more realistic.
100%. Ryan, you want to know what I liken it to? And I'm not at all trying to get political. But Biden thought he had done his time, and then he thought that the country was so screwed up that he was going to come back and do it. I think Jay Wright might have been like, shit. Or like Teddy Roosevelt back in the day did the same thing. And like, oh, shit, I left this place and I didn't give it to the right person. I'm going to come back and do it. Teddy Roosevelt and Jay Wright in the same sentence.
We're going to get comments about Biden now that I just didn't want to get.
I just meant, you know what I meant. I think that it was a realistic.
I understand your point. And he always wanted to be involved in a program. He was never doing this to get so he wouldn't be involved in a program. So I think it's very much realistic, but he's going to give Kyle Neptune this year and not make any overtures.
Jay Wright needs to take a little bit of a step back, in my opinion. We got a few more. Are you scared about the Big East future considering the committee's disrespect? McDonkey and I actually talked about this a lot when it happened. I don't know if I was overreacting at the time, and I said yes. If the Big East puts three teams in the Elite Eight, no, they're going to get the respect they deserve. They had a weird year. Maybe I've calmed down enough.
I disagree. I am a little bit concerned about the future. If the Big East is going to get disadvantaged like that in this situation, I think, listen, 1 year is weird, but if it happens in multiple years, you're going to start seeing coaches the same way we were just talking about with Dusty May.
Yeah, but didn't we get six teams in last year?
Five teams?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'd be a little more. We didn't get really any snubs last year, right?
No, not really. Seton Hall wasn't very close.
Ride, last two. Mr. Lost in the Fight, who has been very nice to us, been DMing me a lot, saying how much he enjoys us. Can you give us an X factor for each Big East team outside of the main guys? If I would, I kind of already said what I thought for Creighton, because I would go with Jason Green.
Probably Steph Castle for UConn. It's been underreported how much he has improved over the course of this season into being just an absolute stud, which is just embarrassment of riches for Hurley and ridiculous that he has another stud on that team. And then Marquette, the easy answer is always Stevie Mitchell because he finds ways to affect games. David Joplin threw up a double-double against Western Kentucky. He had 9 rebounds in the second half. Ben Gold has been playing really, really well recently. He's going to be nasty next year.
Yeah. I mean, you can say Chase Ross too. But yeah. And Ryan, last question is, what are your thoughts on Val Ackerman? Val Ackerman issued a statement saying that she was disappointed in the, but she did not want to yell from the rafters about the Big East being snubbed.
Yeah, the statement's weak, but Val Ackerman basically saved this league. She earned a lot of rope. I don't love the way she handled this, but she'd have to mess up this about 10 times in a row for me ever to stand against her because, I mean, this league was dead, and her and Jay Wright essentially, you know, by themselves brought it back to life.
Words out of my mouth. Val Ackerman has earned enough leash. Now the question will be, is her ceiling been reached where she saved it and maybe someone else could take it to another level? We'll eventually have to find out, but we're not even close to finding that out. 1 year of being snubbed is not going to be enough for me to turn on Val Ackerman.
That wraps up week 20 of the Big East Barroom podcast. As always, we want to thank you guys for listening to us, interacting with us. We really appreciate you. We got a few more games of the Big East season, and then we'll be into the long off season. But we will stay in touch and try to put out some good content for you.
Absolutely. I would say best time of the year, but let's just keep winning games and keep proving them all wrong.
And as always,
thanks for pulling up a stool.